The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast, The Dominique Foxworth Show. Twice a week, Dominique brings you his unique perspective on sports, the personality surrounding it, and just about anything else he finds interesting or thinks you might. So check out The Dominique Foxworth Show. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. Enjoying the summer months. I had a good conversation on my podcast about that A's situation. I honestly wish it had gone better, but it was fun.
The Oakland A's with the fan boycott. That's not a boycott. They're boycotting by actually going to the game.
Yeah, and telling them to sell the team. But yeah, you know, you and I both, I think like the integration of business and sports is interesting and also damaging in some ways. And I think that in that case, John Fisher is also a bad owner. And it just is a whole complicated mess, which it was all clear in my mind what I was going to say. And then, as I am known to do from time to time, try to say too much in 45 minutes.
Nah, it happens. And we're going to talk about this Zion madness and a few other things on the show while I try not to be driven crazy. I've been playing Hunt the Smoke Detector down. I had like 3 of them apparently go out on me at one time, and I got 2. And the worst thing about my place is all these smoke detectors different. So I don't know till I crack it open whether or not I even got the right battery.
Smoke detectors are a nuisance, especially when you record in your home. For
Dog, that's the only part that gets me. I can ignore it. There's a little chirp every now and then. That ain't a big deal. I'm over here petrified. Like, okay, it's not in this room. It's not in that room. I feel like now it's 2 more smoke detectors. I feel like one of them I just changed is actually still out here making this noise. And I mean, I am not bougie to the point where I'm trying to call in the handy to be like, yo, you do this, man. I don't feel like it.
Smoke detectors, I don't know the idea behind it, but why they don't got uniform batteries? Like, it should be a uniform battery for smoke detectors.
I can't figure out why I have counted no fewer than 3 brands of smoke detector in here.
You would think that's a business that wouldn't be worth getting in. Like, somebody should take it over and make it work. Like, it shouldn't be a whole bunch of smoke detectors, especially in one house.
That tells me that whoever owns this building is shopping for smoke detectors, sorting from low to high. Whatever come up top this time. Okay, well, this is what we gonna get.
That sounds about right. I mean, they landlords, that's what they do.
Yeah, man. So I talked a little bit about the Zion thing with Vinny on Wednesday. But before I came in here, you know, I would normally watch the ESPN suite of programs before I come in. We started the show a little bit later recording. We normally record at 10 o'clock. We did it a little late, which means I could watch the first take, and it was Pert and Jay Williams, which is always a delightful combination to have together. That's a whole lot of those. Like, one of my homeboys, I'm pretty sure, is listening to this right now, and we talk about another homeboy. And that homeboy is a little in line with like Jay Will. And the first homeboy is more in line with Perk, though they are not the same. There is some similarity. And the one that's like Perk says about the other one, he used to say back in the day, he's like, I love him. He is not my kind of dude, but I love him. And I get the feeling that that's kind of the dynamic that those two got. Even if they cool, they're like, yo, I normally don't kick it with cats like that, though.
That makes for the best entertainment sometimes.
Yes.
Strong opinion guys who don't really get along but respect each other.
Yeah, yeah. But like, they may even like get along and like each other, right? But they not each other kind of dude.
Yeah. They wouldn't seek each other out. Like, if they went to school together.
Affirmative. Nobody else got another dude in like the core crew. Yeah. Right. Like the day ones, neither has a day one like the other.
After practice, they are going their separate ways.
Yes. 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 But we're talking about the Zion Williamson trade, or not the trade, because there hasn't been a trade, though. Who knows? By the time you hear this, maybe, though I highly doubt it. But the idea of Zion being traded to Portland. And I thought that Jay was making a reasonable argument that right now, for a lot of people, the value of Zion would be so low just to think that it's at the point where a team would consider trading him, right? Like, are you going to be able to get the farm in a trade for Zion Williamson? And thereby, he thinks that New Orleans is kind of stuck with him. But on the other side, because Portland is the team that we hear come up a lot in this discussion, and the thought was that if you're trying to keep Damian Lillard, then trading Zion Williamson is not going to be the move that allows you to do that. He, like, Jay doesn't think that Zion would be the one to make Dame be like, nah, you know what? I'm gonna stick around in Portland. And I have to say, yes, he is. I think so. I see the Dominique Fosbury look on his face. This is my thought on this. Okay. We spent a lot of time talking about Jaylen Brown and the Supermax. And I think that the more that I listened to more people and the more that I thought about it, I personally came to the conclusion that the Celtics are going to be stuck with him because it's just so hard to go get another one of him. Mm-hmm. It's really, really difficult. You're not going to be able to do it. And so they're going to have to figure out a way to make it work with those two guys that you have. Though you and I seem to be kind of on the same path of, but he can't dribble, right? like $60 million, comma, but he can't dribble. Let me ask you this. What do you think is more likely? Zion Williamson grows up or Jaylen Brown learns how to dribble? Because I think it's more likely that Zion Williamson grows up.
Yeah, I think the maturity factor for Zion Williamson, the understanding of what's expected of him and all that stuff, I think is much more likely. My assumption is that Jaylen Brown, he strikes me as a pretty bright person, that he knew he couldn't dribble. He's known he can't dribble for several years now. And my assumption is every offseason he's tried to address it. So at this point, that's something that ain't going to change, which is fine. I've been working on my jumper for a long time. Same. I ain't never going to shoot 40%. It's just not going to happen. And I've come to accept that. I got a hoop in my backyard and I shoot every now and then. And I'm just not a shooter. I'm an athlete. I'm a slasher. That's what I am. And Jaylen, same sort of guy.
Now, while I am inclined to push back on the Jaylen Brown fairly bright thing, as we did have the discussion before, you may recall you had to decide that you were not going to do that once you realized he had put his career in the hands of Antonio Brown.
I think fairly bright is not what it sounds like.
Gotcha.
I just mean you got to be an imbecile to not know that you can't dribble. Everybody been telling you it. So that's what I meant. I wasn't trying to say.
We on the same page there, right? But I had the same thought as you. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that Jaylen Brown just gave up on dribbling or dribbling just decided he didn't need it. Look, in some examples, it happens, right? Clyde Drexler one day was like, left hand, what left hand, right? Like, I don't need this for X, Y, and Z reason. And by the way, didn't need it. Not even a little bit, unnecessary component of his game. But I don't think that's going to come around. With Zion, I do think it's very clear his organization is down on him. The fact that we're even hearing about any of this is a bad sign for him in terms of how people feel about him. People I've talked to, it doesn't sound like his teammates are too thrilled with him and what his get down has been. That is all bad. All bad. All terrible. And when he was playing, they had the best record in the West.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like that's kind of hard for me to shake when they had him. If you put him out there with Dame, and I think what you wind up with if he gets to Portland with Dame and Chauncey Billups, there's some standards here. Right. There's a measure of accountability here, and the owner can give you free run of the place, like apparently is the case for the Pelicans. But there's gonna be people on the ground that is like, hey, we ain't going for this. This is what it's got to be. Yeah. You make that for the number three pick. You make that trade.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are only a few places that can address whatever issues we're hearing about Zion's maturity. There's only a few places I think, and people have to have credibility. They have to have credibility to do it. And Damian has credibility. I guess where I've frowned up a little bit is I don't know what Zion is made of. Like, I think we have to accept that he has not committed himself to the game to the degree that you need a superstar. So I think that Dame is a leader and he knows how to lead. And we've all been made well aware of the way that he leads. I don't know that that's going to work for Big Z. And I'm not saying it will or it won't, but I'm saying that I don't know. And I could see Damian Lillard looking at that like, I don't want this project. But you're right. The talent.
Gotta give it a try. Gotta play to win. Yeah. Gotta play to win. Like that's, this is not like I'm betting on Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
When Beasley had never demonstrated that he was going to be that guy by the time it happened. I'm trying to think of a dude who has actually demonstrated that he can be that guy. And I think that Zion has demonstrated that. You can make the argument about how few games he's played and everything else. Cool. But I can't think of a guy who's demonstrated it. And you don't give it a go. Like, I just don't. Like, an example to me is Joel Embiid. Where while we do the math on Zion and how many games he has and has not played, Joel Embiid missed two seasons off the rip, and then that next season only played 37 games. Now, they were over 500 in those games that he played, as I recall, but I think he only played 37 games after that. They still gave him the extension because he actually got out there and demonstrated that he could be that guy. And look, we got criticisms of him on the back end, but nobody's criticizing the fact that they decided to make that run. And all the stuff about dedication to the game and diet and all of that. Remember the, all the stuff about Joel drinking all the Shirley Temples and everything else? Like, all that stuff was there. And even if right now he doesn't look like the guy that can lead you to a championship, he is the guy that's made them relevant basically for 7 years, six, 7 years. Like, he's done that. You make that run. If I'm Portland, and look, I watched a little Scoot Henderson, and I am on board. I want to be very, very clear about this, but this ain't a promise, right? This ain't Big Vic.
Yeah. I'm not on board for Scoot and superstar build a team around level. And Zion, I'm on board for that. I think what it boils down to is probability, and the probability that you get a number three pick in here, and it's either Scoot or Miller or the twins, one of the twins, the probability that they grow into someone you can build a team around. Well, first of all, that they grow into it, it's low. That they're it next year, it's zero.
Zero.
So, like, it's zero that they're it next year. And Damian, his window's closed. You need somebody who's right now. So, like, while I frown my face up because I'm imagining the marriage of Lillard and Williamson is not going to be completely smooth, I think if you're given the opportunity, that's the best probability you have to win a championship. So, yeah, that's always the risk you're going to take is, or it's always the risk you should take. It's all right. We're hoping that, one, he stays healthy, and two, all of this stuff has helped to accelerate his maturation. And when he gets here, the culture that we've established and the leader that we have will also help to accelerate his maturation. And then he stays healthy and we can do something about it. So, yeah, I'm on board for it, depending on the price, obviously. But I'm on board for it if I'm Portland.
I tell you this, even if we ain't talking about Portland, boy, don't mess around and let Pat find a way to get Zion. Zion going to be out there looking like one of the X-Men if he play for the Heat. Now, don't get me wrong. The bopper's about to be ready. Like it has been demonstrated that if you bring Zion to Miami, he going to have to live at UD house.
Hey, Zion has got a type. And that is a type that is plentiful down there in the swamp of Miami. I was just down there last week, and they moved off of South Beach. So I wasn't even on South Beach. I was in downtown Miami. And yeah, everything that he hoped and dreamed is going to be right there in front of his face. So I know the food in New Orleans is great.
Yeah, that'll be the tough one for him. He'd be like, yeah, dog, but Etouffee be bussing.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge to my man's willpower. But I think that speaks to the point that I was making earlier. Was it's only a few organizations and people that have the credibility. And I think Jimmy Butler, Pat Riley, and the Heat are at the top of the list where people sign there. It's kind of like the Patriots. It's like you sign up because you know what you're getting yourself into.
Yes.
Don't nobody get there and try to manipulate the process. And if he ends up down there, I don't know how it's going to work out, but if he ends up down there, y'all better watch the hell out.
Boy, I mean, if I'm Pat, I'm working it out. Yeah. I'm figuring it out one way or another that we getting down here. Any of y'all can go. I'll trade every single one of you if I have to, unless Spo be the one to figure out how to make this happen. Right. You're basically giving him a version very similar to the best LeBron James that he had. Now, of course, LeBron was a better shooter, but the idea of having a guy with that size and handle and the ability to get to the basket, who's also a pretty good passer. He's obviously not LeBron James when we talk about passing, but Spo figured something out with that. Putting Zion in the middle of that zone, Hagan, they can figure something out with that one.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
But you and I would talk about something briefly before we started this. And it's something that kind of frustrates us all, which is the professionalization of athletes at such a young age at this point, particularly with basketball players, because you can identify the ones you think going to be it so easy. And they're all already preparing to basically just be corporate bots and don't say anything interesting, don't do anything interesting. But they understand that this is a job and they get it very early. Zion is interesting because he was not professionalized in that way. He is not a product of the AAU system in that way. He did not go to one of them basketball schools. Y'all saw them little Caucasian boys he was out there hooping with in South Carolina. He is not locked in like that. He does not seem to have the kind of corporate machine around him also to make sure that he gets himself locked in. He doesn't have that. Like, he could have actually stood to be treated a little bit less like a human when he was a child.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's the give and take, because we were talking about in how we miss the characters in sports. And I was making the point that, yeah, they train it out of them at a young age. They didn't get to train it out. Like, the good comes with the bad. The bad is we don't get those characters anymore. The good is, by and large, you get guys that are mature, at least professionally, to the point where they show up knowing what to do. Like, Jason Tatum was good off the break, and Jason Tatum was already working on new moves every offseason. Like, those are the things you get. But also, when you interview them, you fall asleep. It's just terribly boring. You have to come for the game. You aren't coming for the entertainment. And the way that it impacts the league in a whole is, you were making the point again before we started, that it's fine if the top tier guys don't have no personality. That's fine. But we need everybody else to be a character. But the problem is, everybody training to be LeBron. Ain't nobody out here like, man, I can't wait to be McKee. I'm trying to be McKee on the wing. Let me be one of the Davis brothers. Like, nobody wants to be that.
A few more people need to be shooting for a 10-year vet. You know, like, hey, 10-year vet, great life that comes for being a 10-year vet. Need a few more people shooting for that one right there. You want to be a local star. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Everybody thinks they about to be the one carrying an entire shoe brand on their back, and they're wrong. Yeah. There's only like two or three of those guys who become that. And now it's interesting because that 2019 draft that we now talk so much about, the two guys at the top are two guys who were not preparing to be LeBron, who were not preparing to be those guys. And now they got different sets of problems, but problems nonetheless that seem like they might have could have got fixed if somebody was trying to prepare them to be LeBron.
Yeah. If somebody was in my man Jazz's ear from a young age, I think we have a different situation than we have right now. And definitely the same is true for Zion, because there are systems for the things that trip Zion up. So, like, the diet and working out. Yeah, obviously we have refined that by this point if you had been in this system. But also the extracurriculars, there are people who handle that. There is someone in the crew whose responsibility it is to be the DM man. So you are not, they can screenshot all the DMs that he sent that you want. And then they post them online. You're like, nah, that man, I don't know nothing about that. He's using my name. Like, it never becomes a thing. There is a process for this that, I mean, you know, I don't know. You don't clean your own house.
These cats, man, it's a time with all of these things and looking at it. And I feel bad for Zion to a degree. I mean, he's making a series of horrific decisions, but he also seems to very clearly be a gentleman that really ain't got nobody to talk to about the things that he's going through. Right. Like, that seems to be the one. Who are you supposed to go to about this?
Oh, that wasn't rhetorical.
I'm serious. Like, no, who are you supposed to go holler at?
Yeah, there's nobody to holler at. I mean, someone need to come to you. And it seemed like this would be an older vet need to come to you and say, like, look, bruh, this is how we normally handle this. This is what, like, this is what you do. You ain't got to tell everybody you love them. Like, some people understand the situation, and some people are in it for the same thing that you're in it for. Also, you don't have to fall in love every time. These are things that somebody will tell you.
Yo, let me tell you something. I was talking to a former NBA player, and he used to play for the Rockets. I get the feeling that the vet he's talking about in this case is Tracy McGrady, but it's just a guess. But anyway, this player tells me that he had gotten traded from one team to another or something like that. And when he left the other team, he had a check that he hadn't deposited yet, right? And then paychecks come on NBA letterhead, right? Or team letterhead or whichever one it is. And so he said, and it's in Houston, so I could just imagine this whole scene. This is such a Houston scene. Say he walk in and he deposit that check, puts the deposit slip, hands that check over. He say to teller, start giving them the up and down, you know, giving them the eyes, you know, giving them all that. And he was feeling like a baller. So he took a pen, wrote down his phone number, slid it through to little mama. Say he come back to the locker room. And he telling them dudes, like, yeah, man, I went in there. Dog, she was all over me, man. Slid her that number. And he said the vet looked at him and was like, okay, so you walked in there with this check for how much? And it's got an NBA logo on it. And you think, you just think you that cute? That's what you think? You just think you that fine? And he was like,
yep.
All right, I see you. I see what you're saying. The Pelicans have not appeared to have that gentleman. Herb Jones may be named Herb and talk like he do, but he ain't skipped the line in every way, right?
I mean, like CJ got there late.
Yeah, CJ got there late. That is, you know, maybe a little too late for him to be there, but he needed, like, when David West played for them down there, Stacey Augmon was on the team, right? Like, that's what he needs.
You know, I got a similar story. When I first got to Denver, my first week there, like voluntary minicamps or rookie minicamps or something like that, I go to the mall and I'm just in my regular clothes and I'm feeling confident. I'm feeling good about myself. So I just go, I run in, I see somebody that I think is attractive, shoot my shot. We exchange numbers and we talking, whatever. And then I go home, I come back the next week, and she was like, I just feel like I need to tell you something. I was like, oh, okay, go ahead, whatever, what's up? She's like, well, I mean, I used to date, and she named two different of my teammates. Them cities is small and ain't no baddies in your city that have not at least been approached.
Yes.
Just so you know. And I was like, I appreciate your honesty and the forthright nature. It was, she was much older than me too, but I learned real quick that you are not alone.
Man, look, I was got, don't worry guys. It's not going to go where you think it is. but I remember it was one of my early trips to New York. And I'm standing there by the baggage carousel. It's probably about 10 years ago now. Not 10 years ago. And I'm standing there. And this very striking, dark-haired woman walk up to me. And I wouldn't say she was like foreign, but it was like, hey, what's up? Yeah. She walk up to me. She's like, and I'm waiting the cab line, taking forever. She walk up to me like, hey, you need a ride? I'm like, yeah. Okay. She was an unlicensed taxi cab operator. Dog, I don't even remember how much money she charged me for that ride, man, but it was a plenty. And it was all just because I was like, yeah, I'm going where you going, right? Like, I wasn't even trying to holler at her, right? Like, I wasn't even playing. And I'm like, man, if I could get got like that, and I was in my mid-30s.
Yeah, a smart guy in his mid-30s, and just like, yeah, that's. Do I stand in this line in this heat and wait for a cab, or do I go with her?
And when it happened, all I could do was just laugh. I was just like, oh, okay. I see. You run this 3-4 times a day, and it worked. And my only problem was, what was I given to make it so clear that I was that guy, right? And she apparently had picked out youngish black dudes. That's my rule.
she know I one of my friends who was a woman was just talking about how hard it is to meet people and whatever, and she's like, man, I need to lose weight. This is like a couple years ago. I need to lose weight and whatever. And I was like, no, actually, I mean, you just got to find your room, because this is like, this is making you sad. This all this dieting and working out. Like, you know what? As they say in, what was that, Friday After Next, when the landlord came to the door and they made fun of her mustache, she responded to them by saying, I know somebody who like it. Yep. That's all you need. Just find somebody who like it.
Yeah, I'll be feeling bad on that weight thing when people get there, because you really, there are two plays that work. People only think there's one play. You either need to go like down to the noteworthy place or up to the noteworthy place, because we all know somebody that's just like, yo, if you could get this up to about 215.
Ain't no room in the game for tweeners. Ain't no room in the game for the tweeters.
You don't want to be a 6'7" power forward. you know what you don't want to be in football? 260 pounds. Not a lot of places left in the game for somebody that weighs 260 pounds. Like, if you can catch a tight end, that's fine, right? Yeah. But if you like 6'2", 260, game ain't really got no room for you.
Yeah, we ain't with the fullbacks no more.
No, like, that's the thumper linebacker.
Yeah. Nah, we're not doing that no more. You better get down to 242 and be a super athlete, even the edge rushers.
Yeah, like, we got all kinds of places for 220. Not as many places as we used to have, because the thumper safety is now like deregulated out of the game. But or a weight that's really gotten odd, like the 285 pound offensive lineman. Nah. There's not a lot of plays for 285 unless you play, what, 5 technique defensive end, and you still might want to get a little heftier.
Yeah, that stuff always, like, it kind of blows my mind how random all this stuff is. It's like, they're, like, I think about Shaquille Griffin now as a player who 15 years ago would not have made it in NFL. Like, he just wouldn't. Now he's an all-pro. But, like, if... there's a bigger linebacker, there's no job for you in football. Like, it's just random. Like, had you been born 20 years ago, you might be an all-time great in, like, the run stuff and nose tackle. Like, you don't – in school, you often, like, see your coaches or teachers, or at least when I was there, the fat kids, they're like, man, you need to play football, yes. D-line. No more. Not no more. Like, Aaron Donald, what we looking for? We not looking for the – what sport do the big kids play now?
Well, like, they still make 340-pound defensive tackles, but you have to be Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah, like, you got to be a monster. Like,
yeah, being 340 and sturdy is no longer enough. You're also going to need a swim move.
Got to be explosive.
Need some bend.
Yeah, that's not, Vita Vea, like, another guy who is more athlete than you think.
Right. Like the Sam Adams, Tony Siragusa combination. And see, to me, what would have happened with Sam Adams, because he wasn't always that big, is he would have stayed at a different weight place and been more of a hellraiser than him figuring out, okay, so you saying I can just keep on eating and hold my spot? Like, Ted Washington, we got nowhere for you, Ted Washington.
Remember Gilbert Brown?
Gilbert Brown was the guy I was thinking about when I was thinking about Dexter Lawrence, because I'm sure they listed Gilbert Brown in like 340, but your 340 doesn't work anymore.
Are we supposed to accept that Jokic is actually 280? Because I ain't buying it. You can't be 7 feet tall and not be rail thin and be under 300 pounds.
It's a tough sell. I do agree.
Bol Bol, all right. Jokic, no chance.
Okay, so I do remember Shaq first getting to the league was like 7'1", 295, between 295 and 305 right there. And that's him perfectly sculpted and everything else. I feel like Jokic is kind of in. You could sell me on 295.
Was he 6'11"? He's not actually over 7 foot.
He's like 6'11", yeah.
But man, I feel like one of his arms is 50 pounds. Like, just starting, we had a jump off point of 100 just with the arms. Lower body 150. You trying to tell me his torso, his head, not putting him over 300? Nah.
That man's so ready to go back to Sombor. Like, by the time you get this, I'm sure he will be right back there. He'll flap his wings, his own wings, if he got to do it. He's so ready to go back. Like, I've seen the discussion about whether or not Jokic likes basketball, and it is very clear that he likes basketball a lot. Like, I think that he's not the most demonstrative cat, but he does not do anything to make me think that he doesn't enjoy the game. I think that a lot of the pop and circumstance doesn't really do it for him, but the thing that really doesn't seem to do it for him is he's just this America thing just ain't all it's cracked up to be. I'll talk about Florida James about this. And I think that's the part that people are missing. They like all these trophies and all these parades and everything else. Nah, man, I'm just trying to get back to the crib.
Yeah, I think that all of us like pomp and circumstance. All of us like do the things that we do because we want to get to the point of doing all this stuff is to get the rewards. It seems as if the things that we consider rewards are of no value to him. So yeah, I don't agree with anyone who says he doesn't like basketball, but he don't like all the stuff that we like, all the stuff that we're like, I can't wait to get to the league. Cause you say like, man, I'm a play. It's going to be so fun. No, you want to get to the league so you get that money. You can get the attention of women. You can get a big house and a fancy car. You can get people talking about how great you are. He don't got no time for any of that. He just want to play ball. He don't want to do no interviews. He don't want to talk to Taylor Rooks. He don't want to hang out at all. Just give me the ball and get on my way.
He the one dude sitting with Taylor Rooks and not telling her no secrets, man. Who cares? I forget who the first person was to put that on the internet. They say, man, them dudes be sitting down with Taylor and it's all cap. All truth or all cap.
I can relate. When I was in my early 20s, I'd have told you anything.
They'd be telling Taylor all the stuff, either the most heartfelt stuff or like, yeah, you know, I shot 5 dudes one time. You know, like it don't really be nowhere in between. It winds up being that level. But no, you're right. I just don't like I listened to him talk about the process of like, you got to fail a little bit to get there and then you get better and then you get to the end. That's not the way a person talks if they're not into what it is that they're doing. Right. I did find it odd that like the championship came and he definitely seemed to be the person like the least happy in the whole building. But then he wound up coming up on his brothers and then I saw it all come up there. That's when I was just like, oh, yeah, this American thing, he feels a remove from the culture that he lives in, which totally makes sense.
And I think it also is just uncomfortable for certain people to like be in front of the cameras and be around all this stuff. Because I don't think for a second that he isn't happy that they won, but that don't mean he want to talk about it, or that don't mean he want to spray champagne in front of your cameras, or he want to sit down and chat with you, you know, like when he was around his brothers. Because I think that's what it's always about to me, is the journey with someone or with a group.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. And with his brothers, you saw it come out because he's probably thinking like, where we came from, what we've been through, can you imagine we here right now? He ain't gonna give that to you, Malika,
right?
To his brothers. Oh yeah, y'all got that.
Yo, Ramona Shelburne, I thought, wrote a very interesting story about kind of the like Jokic and Murray and a little bit of contrast of how they came up in these different ways. And there was a very interesting thing in the story where they said there's an old saying in the Yugoslav countries, you're either a colonel or you're dead, right? Like that's how it goes. Either you at war or you dead. Like this is what it's going to be, right? And so the point that they were making is that there's always tomorrow. And that it's hard culturally to stay in a moment like that because, hey, man, you got to be on swivel. Like Jokic was born in the middle of this war, right? He's born in 95. And we also got to remember, and you can see it, but I hadn't really thought about it. His brothers are much older than him. Mm-hmm. Brothers are like 13 years older than him, 10 years older than him. Like one of them jokers picked him up.
Yeah.
Like after the game, that's what I was like, oh, you're not just little brother. Your baby brother. Like I got the same role in my family, right? I was like, oh, your baby brother. A lot of this then started to make sense because it's almost like a high school graduation is really for the parents.
Yeah.
More so than it is for the kid.
Right.
I felt a measure of that in watching his brothers because they was gassed, boy. They was loving every minute of it.
It was relief for him until he saw how happy it made them. But yeah, in most part, it was like, all right, I set out to do this thing. I've accomplished it. I've gotten there. Now, can y'all leave me alone?
Yes.
I just want to go back over there.
Yeah, he's the opposite of his man, Nurkic, who was on that team when he got there. Nurkic, look, I told you, man, I saw Nurkic at summer league. He loved that NBA life.
I mean, it's hard to imagine how you could not. Like, it's everything. And it's not just us. Like, everybody in the world, at least that's what we are taught to believe, everybody in the world want to be rich in America.
is successful in America. He the only one that I've ever met. Like, all of them pretend like, I don't care nothing about this. Or they're like, man, 80% is about the game. 20% is about all this other stuff. When in actuality, it's like 50-50 and sometimes 40-60 in the wrong direction for some guys, which is fine. I'm not judging you. I get it. You young, rich, and successful. Yeah, that other stuff is awesome. But he don't want nothing to do with none of that, which does not compute for me. Like, you don't, like, none of this seems exciting or interesting to you? The best of what we got in this fine country? None of it is like, yeah.
Not even your first night at the club? That dude, right? Right? Yeah. That first time that you rolled out, it's like, oh, okay. You different. This is what genuine. It is. I had a thought also about like the way the Nuggets constructed that team. And I think I talked to Vinny about this on the phone. I don't think we talked about this on the podcast, but this is where I think the Nuggets deserve more credit than they get for the Jokic thing. So yeah, they took him at 41. Nobody there is pretending like they thought it was going to turn into this, right? Like, I appreciate people being on, like with Steph. Nobody actually thought it was going to turn into this. No matter how good you thought it was going to turn out, you ain't think it was going to be this, right? Be real about that part. Okay. But the only way I think this Jokic thing works, you had to turn the whole thing over to him. Like, he can't just be a role player. He had to be the center of the universe of what it is that you run in order for you to actually get the benefits out of having him. And they did. And that's the thing that's kind of wild to do with the second round pick. It's just like, all right, you are the son.
And what's the model they have to follow? I think that makes it even more impressive. It's like it's very much like you see a good football coach do. It's like, all right, these are the pieces we got. This is the scheme we're going to run. It ain't what we ran last year, but these are the pieces we got this year. We're going to focus on that. It's not something you often see with basketball because it's kind of like there is one way to play basketball. You see it more now, but nobody was doing it the way that they're doing it. They got a player that nobody else had. And what probably has happened hundreds of times over the history of multiple leagues is when you get a player like that who is that unique, you try to squeeze him into a role and he never quite reaches his potential. But they was like, man, let's let him do what he do more often. Let's find players that complement him. Let's build this around. So like it is, I know no one likes that quote. Was it Reinsdorf that said that organizations win championship? Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause said organizations win championship. Yeah, that seems a little stupid, but it ain't all the way stupid.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. We've seen players in many places that we thought looked like champions for whatever reason not be able to get it done. Wow, we started this with, I don't know what we're going to talk about, and I keep referring to everything we talked about in the 5 minutes before we actually got on the show, so apparently we had a little more cracking, yeah, you know, than we realized. But if you guys get a chance, the 30 for 30, luckiest guy in the world about Bill Walton's four-hour doc, Steve James, the director of Hoop Dreams and a few other things, did it. My man Ezra Edelman served as an executive producer on it. Check it out. I thought it was really, really good. And one thing that was, for me, interesting slash important about it is, the 1960s and 70s are a poorly canonized period of time for the NBA. Like, one of their problems I think they have is that baseball always did a great job of making legends of their past and doing it as it went. Football through NFL films did a good job of making us know the things that happened in the 60s and 70s. The 70s are like a wasteland for the NBA. It was two different leagues, a lot going on. We all talk all this about Kareem, but how much young Kareem have you actually watched, you know, like seen clips of? And so I probably watched more Bill Walton in this documentary than I had before. Now, one conclusion that I came away from that documentary about Bill Walton was my daddy was hating. Bill Walton was as cold as he wanted to be. My daddy's whole thing was, how dare you intimate or imply that he is as good as Kareem? He smelled it. He got a whiff. What was going on out there, bro? They showed them clips of Bill Walton in the 1977 Western Conference Finals against Kareem. And let me tell you something, brother, he may not have been as good as Kareem, but it was coming, right? Yeah. Like, he's 5 years after Kareem in the way that Jordan came in the league 5 years after Magic, right? Like, he was that dude, but he was also that passer, right? And the guy that gets the rebound and his immediate thought is the outlet pass, all of that stuff. Not just because he's the white dude, but that's kind of maybe the closest archetype that we have, except for Walton. was a more explosive type of player than Jokic was. Like, he's putting it on the ground, bringing it to the rack, banging, like all of this. I watched that and I really was just like, damn, man, I ain't realized my daddy could hate like that. I got to go back and reevaluate every single white player that I did not see with my own two eyes, except for Jerry West. All the old brothers still love Jerry West. They, for whatever reason, they never had to answer. They never required Jerry West answer for nothing. But the rest of you.
I started I started watching a lot of these old games because, like, it finally dawned on me. I was having conversations with Charlie on my podcast about old players as we're ranking them. And mostly it was about Jokic compared to these other players. And everything I know about Kareem, and it didn't strike me as true until I actually, like, sat down to watch it. Everything I know about Kareem is, like, highlights and stuff other people told me.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, I sat down and watched a few of Kareem's, like, actual full games. One thing I learned is they used to do jump ball at the beginning of every quarter. I didn't know that. Oh, that was a thing. Yeah, that was a thing. It was a Knicks game that I saw. Like, they jumping it up again? I thought that was the end of the first quarter. But I saw how exceptional a player he was. And so the arguments about players, the evolution of the game and the evolution of the athletes, like, it's real when you watch everybody, but it's fake when you watch special players. Those guys are just as explosive, just as athletic, just as unique as all the players there are today. I have not gotten around to my Bill Walton rewatch. I will watch the documentary. That'll help me understand it. But we aren't making new people. Like, these aren't new people that we're getting today. The game is just, we're seeing more of it, and the game has evolved to allow for them to be successful.
Let me tell you what I saw for Kareem in that Bill Walton documentary that I didn't realize was a thing. The left-handed skyhook. Now, it wasn't like the 15-foot left-handed skyhook. You can do that with both hands.
That is ridiculous, man. Like, he's just unguardable.
What am I supposed to do if he could do that with both hands?
He was very much like Jokic in that watching him play, there's like apathy is the wrong word, but there's a like workman like, all right, I got a job to do. All right, come down this block. Bang, bang, bang. Take that. All right, back on defense. I'm not going to give you any more or any less that is required to accomplish this job. And I'm sure it changes in the finals, but I was watching regular season games and he just, all right, cool. Not all that happy about it. Not interested in talking to your reporters. I think they tried to hit him with a little halftime chit chat. They learned quickly. I'm sure that he going to give you that Greg Popovich. I ain't here for all that. I don't want to talk to you. Give me the ball. Let's play basketball. Let's move on.
Hey, let me ask you this about watching some of these old clips, because I'm wondering if you noticed something that I noticed. And maybe part of this is just a function of the fact that they was out here wearing smaller uniforms. But hey, man, they may not have had all the weightlifting and all this stuff that we got today, but a lot of them cats was these dudes couldn't play today.
Yeah.
Not a lot of them couldn't.
Yeah.
A lot of them could. They were just doing pull-ups, making it happen.
I was on that. These dudes couldn't play today thing until I started watching. And it was like, yeah, maybe some of them couldn't. Yeah, I think that's a part of the professionalization that we talked about is, I think the mid to lower section of the NBA is vastly more talented and skilled than they were in the past. And that's what I think you get when you watch those games is you like, when one of those guys get the ball, you're like, ugh. This league stank, you know? I saw a couple guys dribbling on the left side of the court with their right hand. And this was like in the late 70s. Yeah. Like this ain't black and white. We had color television and they just driving on the left side, their right hand. When I was growing up in the 90s, we got made fun of at the park for doing that.
Yes.
It's like, and it was crazy. But then when you look at the top of the league, yeah, some people got left-handed sky hooks. It's like, he could do that anywhere. You know, like, at any time. Take me 100 years in the future and drop Kareem off there. He going to be an MVP of the league.
Yo, that's one thing I ain't letting these old folks fool us about, by the way. Don't be talking to me about how they ain't got no fundamentals no more. Y'all's fundamentals back then was not nearly as sharp as you talk about them being. Like, there was some elements of the game, like with footwork type stuff, because the game was more compressed, that you had to maybe be better at in some ways, right? And they like, this generation is not very good at the entry pass. You are correct. All those things hold. However, as you just said, them cats dribbling on the wrong side with the wrong hand. Like, think about the idea that there was a time when the crossover dribble was a revolution. Like, I got the ball in my right hand. I bring it back over to my left. How had nobody thought of that before?
It's like there was no idea of athleticism, using your athleticism. And I guess that is the one criticism you could have of those all-time greats is every week or every game they're not going up against all-time greats. They had some games off. there was some switches that happened on defense that was really like not food like we have today, but a full buffet. Like, nah.
Yeah, that's why them old heads are not about switching.
They can't.
They are not. They're like, yo, do you realize what happens after you do that?
Yeah, there's no legitimate defender besides the 1-5 that we have. That's the only one.
Yes.
Like, whereas the Heat out there playing zone and completely comfortable with Gabe Vincent. Well, not really comfortable, but comfortable enough with Gabe Vincent matching up on Jokic every now and then.
Hey, one last thing, and not the part to be talked about, but with nobody around. What's up with your terp? Stephon Diggs showing up.
And play the music. Play the music.
What did they have to talk out?
Play all of the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Here's the thing that got me about this. Either he is all the way in the right about this, or he be tripping. And I say that because everybody's like, yo, we love Stephon. We just need to talk some things out, da-da-da. Either he right, or they just like, come on, man, let's just get through. Let's just get him back out here. Just get him back
out. You'll never know because he's so talented that you know what you do is you can't tell somebody that talented. He's so important to what they do there. Like, you can't just outright be like, you wrong. I mean, I guess you could do that with some guys, but it don't strike me as he's the type of guy that you can be like, you wrong. But let's work through this. Some things happen. Let's figure it out.
Doug, he's so talented that I was reading a story about this, and they would talk about how in the first 9 games last year, he had like 72 catches. I forget for how many touchdowns. And then the last 9 games, it dropped off to 47 catches. And I'm like, when your drop off in 9 games is 47 catches, you're doing all right, dog.
Yeah, I mean,
you're doing all right.
They still don't have a legitimate number 2 receiver. We thought it was going to be Gabe Davis. It didn't pop up. Like, the gap between him and any of their other offensive skill players is huge. They don't have a running game outside of Josh Allen scrambling and making it happen. And they didn't have a quarterback until he showed up there. So there are only a few players in this league that I think value comes anywhere close to a quarterback's value, a good quarterback's value. And he's one of those players. And so while there's distractions, and I always kind of bristle at the idea that coaches say, we don't want any distraction. This player's a distraction. That's a distraction. Like, we all live. Things happen that are much bigger distractions. I've been on plenty of teams where guys have had serious things happening. And you know what? You show up and you work because that's football, and nobody is valuable enough to allow that distraction to get in the way. If that distraction gets in the way, you don't make it through college. You don't make it to the league. However, when you are valuable enough that your feelings actually matter, yeah, that could possibly be a distraction.
Hey, let me tell you something. That pressure in that division, we're literally – either of those 4 teams could finish in first or finish in last.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Like, with small things break, even with nothing breaking, like everybody stays healthy the whole year, any of those teams could finish in first. Well, except for the Patriots. That would be a very difficult thing for them to pull off. But they could all finish in last.
Yeah. I mean, the Pats, I think, would be hard because of the quarterback situation. But it's possible that the quarterback situation is not as bad as we think it is,
right?
Because the coaching situation was so awful last year.
Yeah.
So they bring in Bill O'Brien, they might figure it out.
You know how desperate all parties involved must be if DeAndre Hopkins is willing to play for Bill O'Brien again.
Yeah.
Like, he has a choice. He does not have to do this again, though. Yeah. He might, because he wanted his money.
Yeah.
And the Patriots need him bad. and DeAndre, I don't practice Hopkins. I'd be very curious to see how that part goes over up there in the we all do the thing. But if you go there, you know what time it is.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been at a Patriots practice. I've heard lots of things about how he's as hard on everybody as he is on anybody, which is all fine and good. But if you get a player, that's really good. I'd like to go back and look at these Randy Moss practices, because I suspect that at a certain point, maybe during training camp, they was going all in with Randy. But at a certain point, he's like, all right, Randy, yeah, go ahead and take this period off.
Well, I'll note, though, year one, all smooth. Year two, kind of weird because Brady didn't get hurt. Yeah. Year three, kind of figured it out. Year four, it all went Randy. it was time to go for all parties involved. But then I'll never forget, it was that game with the Vikings before they let him go, where he lost the ball in the lights and it messed up or whatever. And then spent the after the post game hugging Bill Belichick like they was kin. I was like, boy, that's a weird stuff going on in this whole Patriots, you know. But Randy look at coaches like daddies. Yeah. You know, so maybe it worked. Maybe the approach we talk about worked for him.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. I can't think of a team that's more desperate. But Bill Belichick has never really behaved that way, as if he was desperate, which looking at what they've been putting out there the last few years, he might need to change the way that he operates, because y'all are a little bit desperate.
He's coaching for his job, whether he realizes it or not.
That's madness.
Is it?
I mean, I know what you're going to say, but it's just still hard for me to wrap my head around. I know that it's about what you are. I was going to say it's about what you are going to do. It's normally how people hire and pay, but it's also about the potential for what you can accomplish.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree.
And I guess you could argue that he's lost that potential argument, but no one would argue that he's not the greatest coach of all time.
No.
So it's going to take some, and they've been like mediocre. They haven't been garbage. It's going to take some trash for me to move on from a guy like that.
I'd agree with you, boy. Tyler Landry. I mean, granted, Jerry Jones, he just bought the team, but Tyler Landry got fired. Everybody get it at some point. But with Kraft, he old, man. He trying to get some more on the way out the door. And if he don't think, for whatever reason, like, is the problem Bill Belichick? I find it highly unlikely. Could Bob Kraft think the problem is Bill Belichick? I don't know those people.
But it's not—it's not even about the problem. Sorry to cut you off. But it's also about the egos involved. Is if things are not going well, then Robert Kraft is within his right as the owner team to come in and ask some questions, make some suggestions, try to push things around. So, like, I completely believe that he's within his rights and he should feel justified doing that. But the problem comes when the exact opposite position is just as justified. Because if Kraft walk in his office and be like, hey, we got to sort some things out, let's figure this out, let's do something different. Yeah, you can do that. You're on the team. But Bill Belichick be like, I got 6 Super Bowls, dog. How about you get out of my face? And that's where I think it go wrong. It's not even about them having success or failure. It's about both sides being justified and indignant about the conversation that could land at a point where I'm paying you, what is the reports, like $20 million a year? I'm paying you $20+ million a year, and y'all can barely, or you haven't been a Super Bowl competitor since you lost that quarterback. And then he gonna say, this franchise is worth at least $1 billion extra because of me. Get your old ass out my face. That's how it ends.
I mean, this ended Jerry and Jimmy.
Yep.
And them boys was homies for 30 years. For 30 years. And not only did Jerry fire him, he hired his longstanding tormentor to replace him.
Still ain't put him in the Ring of Honor.
He has to now that Jimmy's in the Hall of Fame, but he was adamant anybody could have won a championship. Translation, I was the coach.
Which is nuts.
That's the translation. I was the coach. And Jimmy's so petty to this day. They say if you get on somewhere and start talking about whatever Jerry's side of the story is, Jimmy will text you screenshots of the contract to show that he was the one who had last say on what the roster was. The idea that that man has screenshots of a contract that he signed in 1989 to tell you everything that you need to know. He went and found that thing, digitized.
Gotta respect it.
Gotta. Different game, man. But that is Dominique Fosworth. Check him out on GetUp. Check him out on Anscape. Check him out on Debatable. And, of course, check him out on the Dominique Fosworth Show, available where you are listening to this podcast. My man, I appreciate you.
Thank you, brother.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Remember, hit the voicemail line, 860-516-4119. We are releasing this right around Father's Day weekend, so it's time for you to tell us about that time you tried your pops. 860-516-4119. Dance Dancing Parker, always an icon, handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.